This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
You have year-end goals. Constant Contact has what it takes to help you meet them faster. Sell more, raise more, and build real relationships with your audience with Constant Contact's digital marketing tools, all made to fast-track your success. Put the go in your 2024 goals with email, social, SMS, and customized marketing campaigns built for you in just a few clicks. Ready, set, go to ConstantContact.com and start your free trial today. It's better
over here. Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Oh, a little 70s retro. All right.
I'm not a gloater, but I've been wanting to do this for an hour now, so you're welcome, John.
That's fair. Why didn't you do like We Are the Champions? That's a good one, too. I bet that's coming up next. Like, welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. You can always listen to us by telling your smart speaker to play KNSS Radio, and make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page, and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Give us a call. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Well, coming up at the November 13th Board of County Commission meeting, Sedgwick County commissioners may be voting on a funding agreement that would provide $2.5 million of your money to the Sedgwick County Zoo for a new elephant barn. And I'm a pachyderm, so, you know, I love elephants. The commission may be voting on this, despite the fact that the public will not have had the opportunity to weigh in on the agreement. So the question is do Sedgwick County voters have the right to say whether, you know, their money should be used to fund a new elephant barn before it's voted on? With us now to answer that question and kind of explain, you know, this whole concept is Sedgwick County Commissioner Jim Howell. Jim, thank you for joining us. It's always nice to have you on the show, my friend.
Well, John, thank you for having me tonight. I sure appreciate it.
It was interesting. I was on, I think it was Kansas Week recently, or I can't remember the context, but someone was talking to me and they asked me about you, and I described you as the Don Quixote of Republican commissioners, because I felt that you were always the one tilting at fiscal windmills, because it does seem like you're constantly the one, hopefully with Stephanie Wise and Jeff Blueball, we've got you some allies, and Ryan Beatty does his part as well. But did I describe this right? I mean, it does seem like this is, it may not be property tax dollars, because I understand that now they may be using, you know, proceeds of some investment sales or whatever, but the bottom line is it's still tax dollar, or taxpayer dollars rather, that is going to go to this project.
Well, I appreciate the adjectives you're using. I love the commission. I think we have a bright future ahead of us, and I'm looking forward to working with both Jeff and Stephanie going forward. But back to your point, you know, when this was first proposed, I did react, because as far as I knew, this was going to be basically take an ending balance, which is, dollars that are left over from previous tax years. We have some balance that we carry forward from year to year, but not a lot. But just taking some of that money and handing out essentially property tax dollars for another pet project, and I reacted to that. I thought, you know, this is going to stop. In fact, I've got a resolution that's going to be up Wednesday as well. I'm probably going to push that back a week, because I've got some personal issues that I need to push that back for 1 week, I believe. But the idea is that we would prohibit property tax dollars from being used for anything other than core functions of government.
Which is a great idea. I think that's, that's an excellent idea. In fact, when I had both Jeff and Stephanie Wise on the show here over the last few weeks, I asked them about that, and both of them were supportive.
Yeah, I do think that I do think it's going to pass when this comes up for a vote, probably, but if it doesn't, we'll pick it up again once we get our new commission seated, and I have no doubt it will pass at that point. But I don't think it's semantics either. When I knock on doors, and you know this is true, if someone says, man, you taxed me out of my house, and we say, yeah, but we're using all your money for really, really important things like the sheriff and infrastructure, and they might respond saying, yeah, but what about things like Sedgwick County Zoo?
Right.
And in the past, it's a valid argument. You know, I think that there is a truth that says we are using some tax dollars for things like Exploration Place and Sedgwick County Zoo, and there's actually about 15 other things I could list that are in that camp. We don't talk about them nearly as much, but you get the idea. And so to have a prohibition from using property tax dollars for that type of spending, I think is needed. And actually, what I think it would do in this type of question today, it actually gives us a bit of a backstop. But let me give you another perspective, which, again, I'm pretty researched in what I do, and I discovered something, honestly, I didn't even know 2 weeks ago. I did not know, and maybe I'm stupid, maybe everyone else is smarter than me on this topic, but I did not know back in November of 1966, there was a public vote that established authority and actually really a mandate to the county commission to levy taxes and borrow money, actually, to purchase 617 acres of land and create the Sedgwick County Park and Sedgwick County Zoo. And what comes with that obligation then is it even says in the ballot question to make improvements, which means buildings and exhibits, and to have animals. And what is written between those lines here is maintenance of those buildings and care for these animals. And you are going to have to pay some people to do that. And so there's a long-term obligation from that vote. This vote was in November of 66. It passed with 55% of the people voting for this. And that set us up, essentially. So we opened a zoo 5 years later, 1971. In August, we opened that zoo. And ever since then, we've had agreements with the society to operate the zoo. We've had agreements with ourselves on how we would manage the finances and make sure we take care of the operations of the zoo. We have 112 employees out there.
Jim, but you and I both know that one legislative body can't legally obligate future bodies, so there's ways out of those things. But I would say that also doesn't obligate the future bodies to massive expansions, to ongoing expenses above and beyond. The zoo has grown exponentially, and when you look at things like this expansion, for example, this $2.5 million for the elephant barn. And don't get me wrong, I love the idea. And I know that they're trying to pursue a public partnership to fund this. My question on this is, I just saw that the press release that they rolled out, what, less than 2 weeks ago? I think my response to that would be, let them go to the public. Let them go to the private sector.
Sure.
And if they come back after, say, 2 months or 6 months, and they find that, hey, we came up $500,000 short, then come back to the county, then come back to the taxpayers and say, we came up $500,000 short. Can you come up with the rest? As opposed to here, where we just started the campaign and you want $2.5 million from the taxpayers. Do you see the difference here?
I absolutely, John, you and I totally agree. Now, there's one twist to this, which makes this a little bit, again, everything's more complicated than it should be. And you know that.
Oh, yeah, it always is when it comes to spending.
So, in this case, they're aware that in 2023, actually going back to 2014, there has been a federal grant from the Department of the Interior, hands out roughly about $250 million each year. Last year was about $240 million.
Of our money.
That's true. Now, here's what's interesting is it's by application. So each of the states apply for some of those funds, and Kansas will make an application for a various project across our state. And that deadline for that application to go in is a couple weeks away from now. And so what the idea is that last year was 23 states got around $240 million roughly. This year the appropriation is about $257 million is going to be handed out to their different applications. And they will spend all $257 million. I hate to I actually at the staff meeting, I said, we've got to stop spending money. This is why we're $36 trillion in debt.
Right.
Bad government. But now here's the other problem is they're going to hand it out to some state. The question is, do you want us to be applying for some of those funds to make this easier for the fund, fundraising of this exhibit? Principally, I could say I know they can raise $10 million. I have total assurance. I know they can raise $10 million. On the other hand, here's the other twist to this, is we have about $7 million of CIP. These are improvements and repairs that are due for the buildings we have at Central County Zoo. And what they're saying is to use $2.5 million of investment revenue to basically forward that money to the zoo because there has to be a public match. And then when they raise the money, they'll repay that $2.5 million by taking care of $2.5 million of CIP out of the money that they raise. So in a sense, this is still our obligation. We're simply using a mechanism to help them make this application for the grant. And that's really what this is.
And what if the grant doesn't come through? Are we then no longer obligated to give them the $2.5 million?
No, we still have to do the $2.5 million. But again, they'll raise the $10 million and they'll pay us back. So their obligation to us is essentially raise the money and pay us back. And that's what they're committed to do. I actually put them on the spot at our staff meeting. They agreed that is their plan. So at the end of the day, we're using investment income, not property tax revenue. Not that it makes a lot of difference between you and me. I understand that it really is still taxpayer cash. But this is money we didn't expect to have. This is above and beyond our investments are performing very well. It should be used for only one-time spending. And in this case, by using it this way, we're going to take care of some CIP obligation down the road. But by putting this money out there today, we can actually help them with this application. Whether they get the grant or not, we'll have to see what happens. It doesn't really matter because our responsibility is to put that money up front and then be paid back when they receive the money for their from their donations.
Well, Jim, as always, you are well informed, and that is the one thing that's always nice about having you on the show. Is I know I'm going to have somebody who knows the facts, who's well informed, and who can and articulate both sides of it. I appreciate you doing your due diligence on this. If folks have questions, if they want to, follow up. By the way, I appreciate you as well filling in for my buddy Pete Meitzner, who was going to join us tonight, but he went to the Chiefs game, and then I'll give him a pass on this one. But I appreciate Pete's willingness to come on as well. If folks want to connect with you, if they have questions about this or anything else, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Actually, I give out my cell phone. It's 316-253-6797. Or can they certainly reach out to me at my email at jim.howell@sedgwick.gov.
Brother, I appreciate you as always, and carry on the fight, my friend. Carry on tilting the windmills, brother.
I appreciate that. Good show tonight, John. Appreciate all you do, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. We'll take a quick break, and then we're going to continue our theme about talking about government spending with Wichita City Councilman Dalton Glasscock. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity Kansas. AFP believes freedom and opportunity are the keys to unleashing prosperity for all. Their community of millions of concerned citizens advocating for solutions based on proven principles to tackle our most critical challenges. Join them. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org and sign up today. And, of course, while you're online, don't forget to like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Well, this week's Wichita City Council meeting was the second longest in history. I think it went till like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. It follows one last week, which was another one of the longest on records. So what's been taking up so much time? They haven't been naming libraries. Trust me, spending was among many topics. With us now to tell us all about it is Wichita City Councilman Dalton Glasscock, another of those Don Quixotes tilting at windmills to prevent spending. Dalton, thank you for joining us. Always a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend.
John, I think last time I was on your show, I was on the other side of the microphone, so it's good not being the host.
That's right. You were guest hosting. That's right. Thank you. Well, it's nice having you. By the way, how's everything with my buddy Todd Starnes?
It's going great. Todd is always Todd, but he's been celebrating a lot more.
I'll bet. Since... Is he on the short list for any presidential appointments or cabinet positions? Everybody else seems to be right now.
Hey, let's start that rumor. We're going to start that rumor right now.
Hey, White House Communications, it would certainly be an upgrade over Karine Jean-Pierre.
You heard it here first, John. He's being considered.
I'm all in. I will post that on Twitter. So, Dalton, I gotta, you know, this all, and I read it in the Eagle, and then I started seeing some other stories about the spending at the city council, including, you know, $500,000 for a couple of porta potties or temporary rest, you know, these outdoor restrooms in the parks. That were valued, that I guess the cost is $100,000, but they're with the bottom for $350,000 or something like that. And I'm just sitting here thinking, the city of Wichita is facing a budget shortfall. Last time I checked, it was like $5 million. What? I'm sorry. I know you and Lily aren't behind this. What the heck is going on?
I think you're asking the same questions I'm asking, and I haven't had the chance to tell you this yet. But our next meeting, we actually don't have one this upcoming Tuesday, but November 19th, they're actually coming to ask for more money because we have an overbid estimate for the two porta potties that we spent $500,000 on. So they're actually coming back to ask for more money on the 19th because we didn't spend enough yet.
For those of you who aren't familiar, this is a couple of portable restrooms that they're going to put in at the parks. And I mean, I've heard the stories that they're worried about, you know, permanent restroom facilities at these parks because they can be vandalized or people can have sex in them or whatever. So they've come up with this really cool idea of these semi-permanent porta potties. But the retail cost on them was X and we're paying 3X. It's like the military buying, you know, $700 hammers. I just don't understand. And again, what this comes down to for me is the city of Wichita is facing a budget shortfall. Why are we even considering it right now?
Well, yes. Each of the, we call them the Portland Lose, they're being called the Portland Lose. And I want to tell everybody that I voted against this because this is wild overreach of government over government spending.
So did the mayor, by the way.
Yes, the mayor did, and also J.D. Johnston, who represents Northwest Wichita. So I want to commend both of my colleagues there. Each one of these is $258,000. Do you know what the average home price in Wichita is, John?
I think it's more than that, isn't it? Or less than that? No, it's less than that.
$197,000.
Yeah, yeah.
The average Wichitan is living in a house that is less expensive than what we spent on porta potty.
On a shitter. I mean, ugh.
Well, and they're called Portland Loo for a reason. The city that they're modeled after is Portland. So I did some research about other communities that have these type of facilities. Portland, Seattle, Sacramento, L.A., San Francisco all have these. Do you know what also has the highest public defecation rates in the country?
Let me guess. Those, cities. Yeah, I was going to say those same cities. And is that the cities that – The vote people who voted for this, I mean, you know, Brandon Johnson and the rest of the Democrats on the city council, are those the cities that they want to turn Wichita into?
That's a question I tried to ask from the bench, but I did not get an answer to, because I think it's very concerning if we're modeling anything that the city of Wichita is doing after Portland or really any city on the West Coast. And we see the challenges they're facing, especially with the homelessness crisis that we see on the West Coast. And then we're spending $500,000 on two porta potties,
and it's not just the porta potties. There's been a lot of this stuff. I mean, I know, you know, I've brought up the 1.9 or whatever it is $1 million in art at the water treatment facility. There's other instances like this, but it's just there's a mindset amongst some on the city council that well, we have to do this or we have to do that or we have to, but the mindset isn't where it needs to be, and I'm grateful that you and the mayor and on occasion JV are willing to recognize when you're facing a budget. It's great to spend that money when you're flush, when you're sitting on lots of extra cash, although when that happens you're supposed to give it back. But right now, and particularly when you're facing a budget shortfall, that's when you have to tighten your belt.
Yeah, it's actually probably worse to spend it when it's flush, because then you create this culture of dependency that people are dependent on meant to solve their problems. And so that's what happened when the federal government infused $70 million of ARPA funding into Wichita. The county got $100,000, and I think they spent it far more wisely. They spent on infrastructure projects. They spent on one-time capital expense projects. The city spent a significant portion of our funds on funding nonprofits. You know what those nonprofits are going to do and what they're going to come back asking for us in a year and a half when these funds run out? More money.
Right. Well, and that's, and we're talking with City Councilman Dalton Glasscock. This is what's happened with, for example, the Violence Interrupter Program. This is also what's happened with the 42 firefighters. You know, they were funded through ARPA funding. And now when that money runs out, now you've got permanent positions on payroll that are funded through a federal grant. When the grant runs out, I mean, and I guarantee you, by the way, the mayor did not go down to that city, that employee, and tell her to lay those people off. That's just a bogus accusation on its face. That's bogus. I know you're not going to weigh in on that probably, but I can guarantee you she didn't go down there and do that. That ethics claim is just a joke. But
I trust our ethics committee to find out the truth on that. And when it comes down to the hiring of the 42 firefighters, we need those firefighters. And
yes,
because we need them, those should have been funded from the general budget.
Exactly.
They should not have been funded from one-time grant. They should have been funded from the general budget, because that is the essential function of government, is public safety.
And the previous council set you guys up to fail by funding them the way they did, because now at some point you're going to have to backfill that. And where are you going to pay for that? That's the problem with doing it with the way they did it.
Well, when you look at the Violence Interrupters Program, it could be the best program in the nation. And, you know, maybe it is the best thing to solve violence in our community. They've only been operating for 24 days. I will not support increasing any organization's funding 100%, more than $1.6 million, with only 24 days of efficacy. This is not a vote against the organization. This is a vote against staff that feels comfortable bringing another proposal after 24 days of efficacy and saying you should fund this program more. You do not know what any success program is for just 24 days of a program in operation.
Regardless of how noble the program may be, and it sounds like from everything I've seen, it sounds like it's a good program. It's got noble intentions. It sounds like the limited results we've seen are good. But you're right. Well, it's you can't just continue to fund something without some definitive results.
And I said from the bench, because I believe in the potential of the program, they cannot rely on us, because we will fail them. Government will fail them, because we will always continue to do that. If it is such a good program, J.B. Johnson actually proposed a good offloading program where, you know, we would give them 90% funding and 70% funding, 60% funding to help them get nonprofit funding for the organization. Because in 2 years from now, when the funding runs out, we cannot fund them, because we're going to be facing a budget deficit of more than $3 million. That balloons to $10 million, and then that subsequently balloons to $12 million. We will not have the funds to fund them. And so because I believe in the potential of the program, we have to set them up for success and make sure that they have other funding streams aside from the city government.
Right, because eventually that money is going to run out, because this is not a core function of government. At some point, you're going to have to offload that to the nonprofit or to the private sector, which is where it should be housed. And again, because this is not, I mean, I saw Brandon Johnson talking to the press and saying that it should be funded out of the police department. But that's, again, now you're taking, what, are you going to take cops off the streets in order to do this?
These are the questions that I need to be asked, I think, of my colleagues. And these are also the questions that we have to be adults in the room. And we have to realize that we have a finite number of resources. The general public is not supporting further tax increases. And so we're going to have difficult conversations of how we allocate money in the future. And it has to be on core services of government, which is public safety and infrastructure. Those are the core functions of government. And we have to do those well. And we're not doing those well. And until we do those well, we need to make sure they're fully funded before we fund other projects.
Yep. No, I agree, Dalton. Well, again, much like my previous guest, I've got my two Don Quixotes back to back tonight. And you know, I was having a conversation with someone the other day, and I was telling them how grateful I am to have my city councilman, who is arguably the most conservative and certainly the most fiscally conservative member of the Wichita City Council. Dalton, I'm so grateful to have you there fighting for us and fighting for conservative, fiscal conservatism. If folks want to connect with you, if they have questions, if they want to just reach out to express their support, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
honestly, just visit DaltonGlasscock.com. All my contact information is there. Feel free to reach out, and I'll take that compliment with a badge of honor, John. So thank you.
Brother, I appreciate you as always. Carry on the fight, my friend.
Talk soon.
We'll take a quick break, pay a few bills, and then we'll be taking your calls, and we'll talk with Deb Lucia, chair of the Sedgwick County Republican Party, about next week's reorganization meeting. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And I don't want any calls. No, it is not too early. You can call, but no, it is not too early for Christmas music. Welcome back to the John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Wink Hartman and the Hartman Group of Companies. Want to remind you to stay informed with up-to-the-minute news by downloading the Odyssey app or telling Alexa or Google Home to play KNSS radio. And while you're at it, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow me on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. And as always, our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. We'd love to hear from you. Studio lines are open. Want to hear from you. We're taking calls, but we'll kick it off with the current chair of the Sedgwick County Republican Party, Deb Lucia. Deb, thank you for joining us. It is always a pleasure, and congratulations on a fantastic results for the Sedgwick County Republican Party on Tuesday.
Well, thank you very much. We did have a very good day on Tuesday in Sedgwick County and really across the state and across the nation. It was a great day.
Well, and you guys put in a lot of work. I saw the, I know my wife and I both got texts from the Sedgwick County Republican Party. There was a lot of work that the party put in to help deliver this result for candidates in Sedgwick County this cycle. And I was glad to see that, because there have been times in the past where the party hasn't been as engaged. And I was really glad to see that you really stepped up on behalf of your candidates.
Well, we worked really hard to do that and really to get people engaged in Sedgwick County that haven't been before. And you know, and part of that was to get information to them, like sending out a, here's the people to vote for. Here's the Republicans on the ballot. Here's judges to vote for the appellate judges. And really to help people when they go to the ballot know what they're looking at and to help them along. So we felt the results were there, and we were really proud of that.
You know, I saw that voter guide that you put out on your website and on the Sedgwick County GOP Facebook page, and I actually saw some of the comments on there where people were saying, hey, I'm glad that you put this out. That's something that hasn't been done, or I don't remember having been done that in every cycle in the past, too. And something that is so important that we educate folks. You know, Kansans for Life does their voter guide. People have asked me to do that in the past, to endorse and put out voter guides. I try not to do it because we want to have everybody come on the show. And if I do endorsements on the air, then especially, then a candidate may not be willing to come on. But I did appreciate that you did that this time.
So once the primary is over and there's Republicans on the ballot, and we had solid Republicans across the board, we had good candidates, people that we could be proud for to have as Republicans that win elections. And so in some ways it was kind of easy to put it together. You know, what becomes difficult are the races where they're nonpartisan, and there were some of those. We can provide information about, here's the Republican on the ballot. You know, if it's a nonpartisan race, then technically we're not supposed to get involved with those. But letting people know who the Republicans are, who the Democrats are, or in the appellate judges' cases, these are the ones that we've seen have voted conservatively,
right,
or have voted with fiscal policies in mind, or fiscally, or, you know, the things that Republicans stand for, that's who we want to represent us. And so letting people know there's nothing wrong with that.
And, you know, it's interesting. There's always been this debate about the quote unquote nonpartisan races, particularly, you know, people will talk about those with regards to the city council races or the school board races where they claim where they're quote unquote nonpartisan. And yet we saw this last year where the Sedgwick County Democrat Party endorsed in the mayor's race. Or where candidates were, I mean, right now on the city council, you have someone who served as a former chair of the Democrat Party. And you've got, you know, the former mayor was a former Democrat state representative. So, I mean, it's, yes, they're nonpartisan, but it's sort of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We all know they're fairly partisan.
Correct. And we did the same thing. We put out a list of everybody that was on the ballot, every single person in the nonpartisan races, and listed Democrat, unaffiliated, Republican, so that when people went to the polls, they'd know who the candidate, what their background was, or at least how they've affiliated themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No, there isn't. And I'm glad you did. And you know, I know that there was some heat. The press got a little upset about that. But you weren't the first to do that. The Central County Democrat Party was the first to endorse in that race. And I was glad that you did.
And theirs was a little bit more. It was that theirs was an actual endorsement,
right?
Where we just informed everybody. You know, here's the Republicans, here's the Democrats, and they were unaffiliated. And in some races, as a Republican, there were races in Central County where there was not a Republican candidate. So letting them know this person's unaffiliated, this person's a Democrat, it's just information.
Yep.
And it's information that people should have.
Yep. No, I agree. You've got a big meeting coming up Thursday night. Doors are 5:30 for credentialing. The meeting starts at 6:00. And this is the reorganization, and one of the major changes is that you're not running for re-election for chair.
I am not. I've been very fortunate to serve for 2 years. I've really enjoyed doing it. I'm hoped that I've made a difference in ways that have been positive for Sedgwick County. Worked really hard for that. It's time though for new people to come on board and continue moving forward. And very happy to have, again, served, and I'm wishing for the best for the next team coming up. So, yes, it's our reorg meeting. We will be electing a new chair, vice chair, treasurer, and secretary for Sedgwick County Republican Party. Very important meeting. One of the key things that the precinct people do is elect the new leadership team. And then they also will be electing the delegates and alternate delegates to the 4th District. So it's an important thing. Hope everybody can show up. We've got most of the precinct people will be there. If they can't, they can have a proxy vote on their behalf.
I did get a question. Someone called me today. They had a question about that. And if I live in a precinct and I can't attend, can I give? And I'm a precinct committee. Well, I am. But if I will be there, by the way, Thursday night for obvious reasons. But if I can't attend and can anyone carry my proxy, or does the person have to be a resident of my precinct?
The person has to be a resident of your precinct. So a Republican resident in your precinct.
But not a precinct committee person, right? Just a registered Republican in my precinct.
Correct. So the most logical thing is, you know, we have a committee woman and a committee man. So if you have a counterpart and say I can't be there, then my committee man could carry my proxy for me. That's the most logical thing to do, is have your counterpart. If you don't have a counterpart, or both the precinct people can't be there, then it has to be somebody that lives, presides in that precinct. That's a little bit more difficult if you don't know who the Republicans are in your precinct. Hopefully you know another Republican in your precinct that can do it for you. But then if it was me, for example, I would have to go sign a proxy with their name on it, get it notarized, and bring that to the meeting. We also require in that instance, though, that we know a day in advance of who that person is, because we have to check to make sure that your proxy is a registered Republican in your precinct.
So the best thing, if they have questions, is for them to reach out to you just so they get their questions answered. If they do need to get it verified, you guys can verify their identities. Just to, I mean, we're Republicans. We believe in voter integrity and election integrity. Best way for them to get in touch with you if they have questions.
They can send me an email to SCRP Chairman, so Sedgwick County Republican Party, SCRP Chairman@gmail.com. I check it several times a day. I will be looking for those, especially now, because there are some people with questions, to make sure that they get their proxy signed and that it's what needs to be happened and that their vote will count on Thursday.
Well, I have it on very good authority that that there will be a slate announcement here in the next day or so. So I'm sure folks can look forward to that as well. And, of course, we'll see you Thursday night.
Yes, well, thank you very much. And look forward to this meeting on Thursday.
Deb, I appreciate you. You've done yeoman's work. You've done a great job as chair. And just keep up the good work. And we'll look forward to seeing you Thursday night.
Okay, great. Thank you very much, John.
We'll take a quick break. Our studio lines are open, 316-869-1330. You're listening to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to The John Whitmer Show on 98.7 and 1330 KNSS, Wichita's number one talk, sponsored by Americans for Prosperity. Make your voice heard today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Get involved. Get engaged. Volunteer. It's a great organization. I highly recommend them. And, of course, while you're online, make sure you like and follow the John Whitmer Show Facebook page and follow us on X at John R. Whitmer to get all the latest updates on the show. Time now for another Hartman Truth Minute.
This is an opinion from a former judge, Keith M. Albert. I am a student of law whose age is 85. My first year of college was 68 years ago. One class I took was political science. A half page of my textbook essentially outlined a few steps to overturn a democracy. 1. Divide the nation philosophically. 2. Foment racial strife. 3. Cause distrust of police authority. 4. Swarm the nation's borders indiscriminately and unconstitutionally. 5. Engender the military strength to weaken it. 6. Overburden citizens with more unfair taxes. 7. Encourage civil rioting and discourage accountability for all crime. 8. Control all balloting. 9. Control all media. What was printed in 1954 as a possible diabolic nightmare has become an emerging reality. I hope that Americans will unite enough to pen a good finish.
Well, they're working pretty good so far. I would say America's got it right so far, that's for sure. I didn't catch the name. We've got a
That'd
caller.
Tom.
Tom, you're on the John Whitmer Show. Thank you for sticking around.
Hey, John, great show. I've been listening to you for quite a while.
Thank you.
But I just had to share this with you. I heard this commentator a few days ago. You know how so many people, just like 8 years ago, were so upset that Trump won, they were threatening to kill themselves and do God knows what else.
Oh, yeah, I've been seeing the videos of them shaving their heads. Yeah.
Well, my favorite was the guy said he was so upset that he was going to move away from the United States and move to Hawaii.
That had to be a liberal.
And the two guys said, should we tell him? The other guy said, no.
Yeah, no. Oh, that's priceless. That's priceless. Tom, I appreciate that. It is funny. I don't know if you've seen some of these videos, Phil, I saw one the other day. This girl shaved her head, and then she said she was going to abstain from sex for 4 years.
I did see that one.
And I thought to myself, well, now that you've shaved your head, the other won't be a lot easier. But, it's like, come on, people. It's not the end of the world. If we'd won, it's not the end of the world. If we lost, it's not the end of the world. We've lost before. I mean, I've been through two gubernatorial campaigns where I drove a bus all over the state to help get my candidates elected and lost twice. You move on. You get up the next day, you go to work.
But you didn't
No, I did not shave my head.
You did not threaten to shave your head.
Or give up sex. Yeah, I mean, it's like, come on. Grow up. These people are just not grounded in reality.
Oh, and then the montage of the gals from The View, and then Rachel Maddows of this world, and the Joy Reads, and it's just it's just head scratching.
And yet, had we lost, Republicans would be going to work the next day.
Yeah,
I mean, we'd be disappointed. Don't get me wrong; I would have been very disappointed, and I don't know how I'd have had to put up with her cackling for 4 years. But, you know, we'd have pulled ourselves up by our bootstraps and gone to work the next day. And you've got these people that are just wailing and gnashing, and, you know, they're just beside themselves because Kamala Harris lost, and trying to figure out what possibly could have happened. Well, what happened is you ran a bad candidate and she lost. That's what happened. So, you know, who knows? All right, folks, thank you for joining us. We've got a great show planned next week. In the meantime, carry on. We'll talk to you soon.